This is a Pinball News production.
I sure thank you all for coming and for finding the room. Dan, if you'd help me a second, I got a little handout for free for anybody who shows up. There's a bit of information here. I'm sure pleased that you're all, and I'm certainly pleased that I'm here at the Pinball Expo today. This is the fourth annual expo, and I've been here all 4 years. I live about 2 hours north of here up in Mendocino County, where I have owned and operated a pinball repair and sales shop for about 15 years now. And I wrote the book Pinball Machine Care and Maintenance, which is now in its 14th printing. We've had a lot of good success with it. And a lot of what I have to talk about today is going to be excerpted and brief from the book. So if you don't want to take notes, we are selling copies today. I'd be privileged to sell you one, or just listen in, and I got some 10 tips I'm passing out to you all. The seminar is about buying a pinball, and it's also about being able to adjust and maintain your own machine, because there's quite a bit you can do all by yourself that's fairly easy and doesn't take a lot of a lot of knowledge other than basic using meters and a little bit on wiring, and we're going to get into that a little bit here. But I'm going to start at the beginning with people thinking about buying a pinball machine, because that's where everybody gets started. And if you've been to the expo here today, you're probably aware of how many different kinds of machines they are, and over the years thousands of them were made, everyone very similar, but everyone a little bit different. And so you really have your pick of the kind of machine you're interested in, and the number one thing, and people get very excited when they think about getting a machine. They usually haul home the first one they see that's for sale, and later maybe give it a little more thought, because you're going to be looking at that machine probably for years. It's going to be looking at it every day, and without a doubt, the visual, what it looks like, is unquestionably the most important thing. The back glass, the painting, the artwork, the theme, whatever it is, there's so many different ones, and some of them you might find very attractive, and some of them you may find not so attractive for you or your family. So pick one you really like to look at, because that's what you're going to be doing for a long time. Number two, unless you're really good at repairs, find a machine that's in good physical cosmetic condition. You don't need to buy a funky looking machine unless it's $25 and you got to take it home. But there are plenty of machines, even going back 30 and 40 years, that they still look really nice. Most important, the back glass, the upright artwork, that is still in very good shape. Up until the mid-80s, that was a painted glass, silkscreen paint, and that paint would fade away and it would peel off on some machines, and on some machines they were actually perfect shape. Starting in the mid-80s, they turned them, there's a flexible plastic sheet called a translate, and it's sitting behind a clear plastic glass. That's what you're looking at up there, and they hold up a whole lot better. But if you're seeing a back glass that's cracked or broken or missing a significant amount of paint, that has reduced the value of that machine dramatically, because it's very hard to find a replacement. When you do, they tend to be very expensive, and shipping them is a real trip getting that glass. There are a handful of old machines that were so popular that people are remanufacturing the glass, making reproduction glass. You're talking about anywhere from $200 to $400 just for a piece of glass. So hunt for one you like to look at. Also, the cosmetic condition of the play field where the ball rolls around on. You want to find one that's not missing a whole lot of paint, that hasn't faded away too bad. You want to kind of like to look at that, because you sure don't want to do a replacement play field. Even if somebody gave you one for free, the hours and hours of work that would go into swapping it out is really hardly worth it. And finally, of the three, the cabinet and its cosmetic and physical condition. Is the original paint there? Is it faded or chipped? Have people carved all kinds of interesting things in it? Is it really beat up, or is it nice looking? It's amazing how many machines are out there that look just fine. And so look around. You have many, many options. And then, of course, the next most important thing is how well is that machine working? Is it working perfectly? Is it got a few things wrong with it? Does it need major repair? Because if you're not good at fixing machines, and there are a lot of minor repairs I'm going to mention today that you can fix yourself very easily, but a machine that is not working will fetch a fraction of the cost of a machine that's working well. And that's something you want to look at yourself. And that's part of the problem of buying a machine through the internet, something. What the seller tells you is rarely what the real life is. The seller will tell you that this machine is working just fine when it's not. The seller will tell you, oh, it's just a very minor repair. And then you say, well, why didn't the seller make that very minor repair? And to find out, so whenever I go get a machine, and I've bought many, usually the first thing I ask is it working? And the seller says, oh, it's working great. So I go over there and we plug it in and turn it on and it won't come on. And then the ball won't pop out. And then some target won't work. And the seller's usually scratching his head saying, boy, it was working last week. When, of course, it probably wasn't. One of the best ones I ever found, there was a machine out in Lake County that it was like a 50-year-old game I really was very interested in. It was very old and sort of beat up. The guy wanted, I think, $300 or $400 for it. And he said it was working just fine, and I drove over there, and we plugged it in. It wasn't working at all. And he said, well, boy, it was working when I stuck it in the garage recently. So we opened it up, and it was missing three fuses. It had a burned-out fuse and two cut wires sitting there. And I said, well, since you put it in the garage, somebody's yanked some fuses out and burned the rest of them out. And he looked at me and he said, how about $50? So I took it home and I'm still trying to fix the thing. So if the machine needs real repair, you should find out before you spend money on it what it's going to cost. Most any pinball machine is quite fixable, but it could cost you a whole lot of money to get it fixed. And a repair job might be more expensive than finding a machine that isn't working. What people like to do, if the seller will let you, if the machine is working and seems to be playing, if they'll let you take the playfield glass off so you can go start a game and with the ball or your finger, check every target, see if they're all working. Find out if they are working, at least you'll know where you're at. See if everything's scoring, see if the ball always kicks out, see if it goes to the next second and third and fourth ball or not. If it's more than one player, does it go to the second player and the third player? Because a lot of them will have minor problems or major. You really don't know till you get into the machine. Sometimes a flipper won't be working or it won't be working well, and that really is usually a minor fix you can do yourself. But you really want to know what you're up against when you're trying to decide what you want to take home. I highly recommend that you don't buy a machine off the internet. Unless you can actually go and look at it. In my shop, we regularly have what we call the eBay machines coming into the shop that the guy in Iowa said was working great. And by the time we get to California, it had a mess of problems. Some of them genuinely happen in transport, and some of them genuinely the sellers didn't exactly describe the game too very well. If you're buying an electronic game, and starting in around 1976, all the pinball machines manufacturing switched from what was called electromechanical, which they'd been making since the 1930s. The electromechanical games had where the actual reels turned and the chimes rang, and if you went back to before 1960, scoring was with lights on the back glass that actually lit up. And that got switched over around 1976. They went to digital scoring and electronic, and you had the digital displays that have evolved into something like what you see right over there. The early electronic games, the ones that made in the late 70s, had a lot of problems. They were still inventing circuit boards back then. They were still experimenting. They didn't do a very good job till about 1980 or so. But one of the most important things, if you're looking at a digital game, is to find out the condition of the batteries. All electronic games up until a couple of years ago had batteries mounted on the CPU board, the major circuit board. They were used to store high scores and bookkeeping information and special settings when the machine was turned off. And if the batteries weren't there, it would revert back to the original factory settings. Well, after years and years of the batteries sitting in those machines, some of them started to leak battery acid. And if that acid gets into the circuit board, it will destroy the circuit board, and it will have to be replaced. And you can buy new circuit boards now at a price of anywhere from $200 to $250 for a circuit board, but there's no reason to have to do that. Whenever I get a call for somebody who wants a electronic game fixed or wants to sell one, my first question is, what condition are the batteries in? And the answer I get almost every time is, what batteries? Because I said, how long you own that game? He says, oh, 15 years. I'm going, oh, dear. Well, good luck, because but when you open up the back glass, that's a hinged door up there behind the glass. It opens out, and then you can open up, and you see all the circuit boards. The largest circuit board, usually in dead center, is the CPU board, the main board, and the batteries are mounted on there. Quite often, they're alkaline AAs, or they're NiCads that look like the alkaline batteries. And you can just look at them, and you can see if you see any corrosion. And if you can, the boards are mounted on little, you can snap them off. It's just very easily, you can turn it over, and you look at the back where you can see all the copper circuits, and you look for any corrosion, and if you see any, you know you have a problem. Some NiCad batteries are little square cylinders that are soldered on there, and they also used some lithium batteries, which are silver discs about the size of quarters. The lithium batteries seem to do a lot better than the NiCads and the AAs. So have a look, and if you do buy that machine, pull those batteries out right away and put new batteries in right down when you replace them, and try to remember to replace them once a year. That's a major problem we've had with the old machines when people don't know about their batteries. If you want your machine to accept coins, as opposed to setting it for free play, you want to have a look inside the coin door to see if the coin mechanisms are still in there. These are removable brass or plastic mechanisms about 3 inches square that the coin hits. It hits a little switch and sets you a new game. A whole lot of operators, when they would sell their machines to the public because they're done using them, would pull the old coin mechs out of there for spares, and also they didn't want anybody who were buying those games to compete with them. So you don't need coin mechs to operate a game. They can be easily set for free play. But if you do want to collect quarters from your friends to help for snacks or repairs, you want to see if a coin mech is still in there. You only need one. And you can still buy coin mechs, but they've made hundreds of different designs, shapes, sizes, and you want to see if you can find one to fit your particular machine. And they're not inexpensive. But my shop, I've got about 30 of them sitting in a box, and I can usually find one to match my machine, but it's not always guaranteed. And then you come to the question that I get asked all the time, is how much to pay for a machine you're going to buy. People all the time call me up and ask me what a machine is worth. And I say that asking how much a pinball machine is worth is a little bit like asking how much a used car is worth. It's all over the board. It really depends on the condition of the machine, how old the machine is, how popular the machine is. There are some machines that people have just got to have, like the Addams Family or the KISS machine, that drive up their prices, even though they may not be any more fun to play than machines nobody's ever heard of. Machines that are working in good order will fetch maybe 10 times what a machine that isn't working will fetch. And, of course, always remember that somebody may have to sell this machine. They got to get it out. They're moving. But you don't have to buy that machine. And so you're in a position to make sure you want to pay a fair price for that machine that you're happy with. Some people can pick them up for $100. Some people can pick them up for $3,000. It's all over the board. But it's a good idea to have some idea of the value of that machine, to get some idea what they're worth by comparing them to other prices for other machines. Finally, when you do buy a machine, ask the seller if they've got the paperwork, the schematics, the owner's manual. Make sure they got the keys. Quite often they forget to give them to you, or they say, oh, can't find the keys. And then you'll have to drill out the locks to be able to take it apart, which is no big deal. But I've gone home many times and forgot to ask the owner where are the keys. And sure enough, they'll mail them to you. But if they have the original owner's manuals and the original wiring diagrams, that's a real plus. It's really nice to get that original documentation. If they don't have it, most of the pinball suppliers around the country have duplicate. They have Xerox copies they'll sell you for just about any pinball machine for about $15 or $20, and you can order it. But it's always fun to get the original. And if they don't have the paperwork, then that's quite often a negotiating point. And last but not least, on tips on buying a pinball, figure out how you're going to get it home. They are very heavy machines. They do break down. The newer machines, the heads are hinged and they will fold down to help for clearance. You want to be sure when you fold them down that you put some sort of cushioning between the head and the top of the cabinet so you don't scratch it up. The older machines, the heads did not fold down, but they unbolted. And you could unplug the wires in the back, take the four bolts out, and just take the head off and carry it separately. And usually that's what you had to do to be able to get it into a vehicle. And when you want to make sure, it's particularly for the painted back glasses, the older ones, when you're transporting them, that they're not rattling in their case. Otherwise, they could do damage, shake paint off. If it's kind of loose in its mounting, grab a little piece of corrugated cardboard and shove it in there so it's pretty solid. Most important, take the legs off. Even if you're putting it up in a pickup or something, remove the legs before you transport it. It's only two bolts. It gives it a much solider center of gravity. You can't tip the machine over like you can on the legs. I can tell you horror stories from everywhere of machines that just fell right over because they went over a bump, they took a turn, and whack. And machines that have fallen off the back of pickup trucks and out of the back of vans with the door open because they didn't tie them down. They may be big and heavy, but you really should tie them down and get help. I've injured my back more than once trying to move pinballs, and be careful not to do that. And those are some of the very basics of what to look for when you're buying a machine. But take your time. There's so many of them out there. You have lots of choices. I was wondering, does anybody have any questions on what I've covered so far? Yes, sir.
You talked about the circuit board replacements and said it's not necessary. So do you typically, if I can't do the repair of the CPU board myself, would you recommend getting it repaired? Or just, I can install the new board. I just couldn't do it repairs.
Well, what I was talking about is you can swap the batteries easy enough, but if the circuit board has battery corrosion on it, it's not worth repairing. We've repaired them, but discovered that the corrosion comes back. And so most circuit boards who have bad components are repairable. And what most people do is they manage with some help to isolate which board, because there may be five or six of them in there, is the problem. And there are places all over the country, there's one here in Novato, an excellent guy. All they do is fix boards. You just mail them the board, and they do the repair, and they mail it back. And all you want to do is be careful. The boards plug in with little Molex, little plastic plugs, And you just want to, if it isn't indicated which plug goes where, get out a Sharpie and put and mark the plug and mark the part of the board where it goes, so you don't put the wrong plug in the wrong place, because that would not be a good thing to do. And it's pretty hard to reverse them and flip them, because most of those plugs have a little key, a plugged hole, so you can't turn it around, but you want to take a look and be sure. Very few people actually repair their own circuit boards, but in the case of a board like a CPU board that's been, you know, corroded, they do sell replacement boards. And for those old early 70s machines that never worked quite right in the first place, they sell replacement boards to update all the electronics on them, and they work like a whiz, but just depends on how much money you want to drop into that machine. So, yes, sir.
Okay, question. With the new ones, like that one over there, very high dollar ones, would you recommend using the UPS on your power supply with the filter on it? Protect your investment?
Well, the only problems I've known about pinball machines that have been affected by power, and it has happened, not to the new, to all of them, is if lightning hits a PG&E power pole near you and hits the transformer, and there's a surge of electricity, it'll blow out everything in your house, including the pinball machine. Some of the machines have a little UPS sort of built into them, some don't. It never hurts to have a protection on it, just like you would on a computer at home. It's very unlikely to happen, but it can. PG&E, by the way, we've billed PG&E for machines that that lightning is damaged, and they've paid the bills, but you really got to fight them for anything and everything. And so it wouldn't hurt at all to have a surge protector on it.
And when there's lightning, unplug it.
Yeah, well, it's a good. That's a very good idea, you know. And if you aren't going to be using it for a while, you can unplug it. But when the machine is plugged in, these newer machines, they are drawing a little bit of current to keep everything up. So it normally you just leave it plugged in the wall. But if you know a big storm's coming, it's a good idea to unplug it for sure. If you see the lights starting to flicker and things, you know, getting a little crazy, they tell you go turn off and unplug your computer. The same thing would apply to a pinball machine. Yes, sir.
You were talking about swapping out the batteries. When you do, you said you lose the settings. Does it also lose any ROM updates?
No, it will. If you swap the batteries out when the machine is turned off, you will lose any of your custom settings. Like if you set it for free play, or you have you see your initials with your scores, but if you're careful and you have the machine turned on, not just plugged in but turned on, and then you swap out the batteries while it's on, you will not lose those settings. But you want to be very careful that you don't short something out. Don't you want to stick the battery in upside down, because you'll blow it up and you don't sure want that to happen. So yeah, sometimes it's better just to let the adjustments go and then reset them later on.
Sort of follow up on the ROM question. Is there ever a need to really update the ROMs on machines for fixes?
Well, no. If you like the way your machine is playing, there isn't. But there are quite often updates to make your machine faster and different. And people, I see no reason to. I've never done that myself. But sometimes when you get bored with the machine, they actually have ways of reprogramming them. But that would be something that would be a different board or someone who knows how to change. It would be a whole different IC, computer chip, and I don't really see any purpose to that. Yes, sir?
Getting back to the surge protectors, if the power company offers a whole house surge protector, they'll pull your meter, put the surge protector in, put your meter back up. That's a whole house protector. Then if you want to even go more elaborate like I have, at the individual circuit breaker, you can, for that circuit in your game room or multiple circuits, you can put another surge protector in that. And your third line of defense is at the outlet itself, you can put a surge protector. They can put 100,000 volts from a lightning strike, it's not even going to get past the meter. But right. I do advise turning the power off. There's light. You can see lightning, turn it off. Why take the chance?
Yeah.
I've done it on all my cables.
And what company is that?
Well, I live up in Oregon. I would assume PG&E down here would offer the whole house for about $120. And we have lightning where I live in Sisters, Oregon. Yeah.
Well, down here.
Unless you, when you go on a trip, you want to turn off the breakers to your game room, which I forgot to do.
Well, down here, if we can get PG&E to promise not to blow up our houses, we're happy campers. PG&E has really had some problems lately, including, you know, and their smart meters that are smart for them to collect more. Everything about PG&E these days is not getting very good press. That's well. There are other companies, but all they are brokers, and they broker through PG&E. And PG&E, they own the wires, and they own the connections, and they own the meters. And it's them or solar panels or kerosene lamps. That's your choice. Yeah, it's a monopoly. That's right. No getting around it. But we can still protect ourselves from them. Okay. Yes, sir.
We're getting the Indian summer. So the brownouts, what I was basically saying is the UPS about the brownouts, but when the air conditioners are turning on, the lights dim and everything else. That's what I was basically saying.
Well, if you have an old electromechanical machine, the pre-digital machines, that would not be a problem for them at all. They can handle just about anything. But the electronic machines have very touchy circuits, very fine voltages, and if you're there, yeah, it would be a good idea not to have your machine on because those voltages will affect a lot of the electronic components. They're very delicate. They'll last for years, but they aren't like the old electromechanicals that'll last forever if you don't damage them too bad. They are really indestructible. So I'd like to move on a little bit and get into some of the interesting things that you can do with your pinball machine, easy stuff for adjusting and setting up, bringing your machine home if you haven't brought it home yet, some of the most important things to know about it, or if you already got it, most important is where you're going to locate the machine. If it's going to be not in your home, but in a garage or a workshop or someplace that's not always heated, you want to be very careful with moisture. Moisture will damage the paint. If it's you're over on the coast here or something, and it's not heated, it's a good idea to throw a blanket over or something. Keep it out of direct sunlight because the direct sunlight will fade the paint. It will fade the trans lights. So again, if it's going to be in bright sunlight, it's a good idea to keep it covered when you're not using it. And if it is in a room or a place that isn't normally heated, don't turn on the machine until the room is up to room temperature. If you turn on a machine cold, the electronic machines, the electronic circuits really, and the same with computers, they don't like cold rooms and you could possibly damage them. More important is the paint, particularly on the old back glasses. When it's cold, you turn on the machine, the light bulbs come on, they get very hot, and that paint will peel right off. The glass will actually shrink a little or expand a little from the heat and will actually damage the paint. So it's torture on that paint to have very hot lights come on in a cold room. So you definitely want to have that room up to room temperature first. It's really important to make sure your game is leveled side to side. If it's off level even a little bit, the ball will roll off to the side and will affect your play dramatically. So all games have these feet, these leg levelers they're called. They look like this, where they screw in, and then they screw into the bottom of the leg, and then the nut tightens them. So what you do is you put a level across the back, and you adjust the two back, and level across the front, and you adjust the two front as close as you can get to perfect level. You don't have to be too into it. Just level enough so when the ball hits center, it'll roll down center instead of oozing off to the side. And keep in mind that if you need to get into that machine to like fix a broken rubber ring or get a ball out of where it gets stuck, you need about 4 feet of clearance in front of that machine to pull the glass out. And therefore, you want to make sure you have room to work on your machine. Other than that, wherever you want to put it is going to be fine, but it is a machine, and you do want to take care of it. Some of the things you want to check as soon as you get a machine home, and even now if you haven't, number one is, see, when they get old, we're not used to anymore having old appliances. We now toss out the appliances, but back when people kept old electrical appliances like old pinball machines, a lot of the wiring gets old and gets cracked. You want to look at the cord coming out that plugs into the wall. Make sure it's not frayed. Make sure it's not, the insulation is chipped off. Make sure the plug itself is in good shape. To replace that cord is very easy and quick. You don't want a cord that's going to cause you any electrical trouble. So have a look at it. Most important, check the fuses. Every pinball machine has anywhere, the old ones had 3 or 4, the new ones might have 20 or more. Check all the fuses and make sure they are the right amperage and the right voltage. I have, over the 15 years we've had the shop, I don't think I've ever had a machine come in and had all the right fuses. People just stuck in whatever they had. And the problem is that a circuit, if it's rated for 10 amps, you don't want to put a 20 amp fuse in there because the fuse is there to protect the circuit. If it draws more current, you want that fuse to blow instead of having a component blow. Or if you do what some people, and it's absolutely amazing to me, they have a burn fuse and they wrap aluminum foil around the fuse. They pull it out and stick a nail in there. I kid you not. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could set the house on fire. If you have a component going, there's nothing going to stop it. It's just going to get hotter and hotter and hotter. And it's utterly foolish to do that. Fuses are 50 cents or a buck. So check all the fuses. Make sure they're the correct amperage. Most important, you can use a lower amperage fuse in a higher circuit, though it'll probably blow the fuse. But you never want to put a higher amperage fuse than what they call for. And fuses are also rated by voltage, you don't want to put a 30-some volt fuse in a 100-volt circuit. You can always put a 100-volt fuse in any circuit. So, and most fuses like are sold at like Radio Shack, places like that are rated at 100 or 200 volts, so it's not a problem at all. So check all the fuses, have a look, make sure they're not burned, and make sure that they're making good contact in the fuse holders. That's where you will lose connection. The fuse holders get a little loose, a little bit corroded, so you want to clean them up a little bit. Make sure contact's good.
How do you know the amperage of a fuse that's already installed?
You can pull the fuse out and look. You just pop it out. Make sure the game isn't turned on, so you don't shock yourself or unplug it from the wall. Most fuses rate the amperage right on the... The fuses are little glass fuses. They're about an inch or so long. They have metal tips at each end. You've seen them. You can see them in audit cars all over the place. And by the way, don't buy car fuses because they're 12 volts and they weren't designed for pinball machines. And next to on the fuse holder, usually or right next to it, will be the listing what the fuse ratings are. If it's not there, the schematic and the owner's manual also have the fuse ratings listed. So compare the fuse to what it says and get the right ratings.
Slow blow, fast blow.
Regular fuses are also called fast blow fuses. If there's a surge, they go just like that. There are some fuses called slow blow because they take a little time blowing because when you particularly on the main power to a pinball, you might get a surge when you first turn the machine on, so it counts to 5 before it decides to blow to let that surge go away. So you will find there are a few circuits, particularly the 100-volt circuits, that want a slow-blow fuse. But normally, no, you don't want to put a slow-blow fuse in a circuit unless it specifies it. Because if there's a surge in the regular circuit, you want that thing to blow right away. And what happens if a fuse does blow? Well, if you've shorted something by mistake, if you stuck a screwdriver in there in the light socket and shorted it, well, then you know why the fuse blew. And you know that it was just doing its job. But if you got a blown fuse and you don't know why, and so you replace the fuse and everything's fine, well, somebody may have shorted it along the way. But if that fuse blows again right away or very soon, don't keep putting fuses in there. There's a short in there, and you really need to find out where it is and trace it down or have somebody trace it down. Particularly in electronic machines, they don't like surges at all. So if you keep putting in fuses and fuses, you may damage them anyway. So, you know, give it one try to see if it was just a fluke, and then look for whatever problems you have. There are quite a few things you can do to take care of your machine. I think the most important thing to mention is the ball or the balls. They only cost a couple bucks. You want a ball that's shiny. You want a ball that has no rust or pitting. A pitted rusty ball is like rolling sandpaper on your beautiful playfield, and in a short time it'll just take the paint right off the playfield. So if you got a ball that's got some nicks or scratches or rust, don't use it. Go buy yourself a new ball and treat yourself to a shiny one. The shinier they are, also the better they roll. Another most important thing related to that, I brought a lot of little parts here if I can find them all. Well, I don't have it here, but the shooter tip, the little rubber tip that goes on the shooter thing. You want to make sure that's in good shape, because if that tip starts wearing out at the tip and the metal shooter rod starts coming through, you don't want that metal to hit the ball, because the metal will damage the ball. And then, oh, here comes the shooter tip. Thank you. It's just a little white or gray thing. It's about 50 cents at a parts store, at a pinball part. And definitely, if it's damaged, don't use it, because you don't want to damage the ball and have the ball damage the play field. It's very easy. Most machines, when you buy them, they have ancient old rubber rings in them. Sometimes they got rubber bands in them where the rubber rings broke. Treat yourself to a set of new rubber rings. They're much more elastic. They'll just do wonders for your machine. They'll have more spring to them. And what's absolutely amazing is these pinball dealers around the country, and in my book I list some of the ones I like the most. You tell them what machine you have, and they'll put together a whole set of rubber rings just for your machine for about 15 bucks. And you can spend about a half an hour, take the glass off, swapping out all the rings, and have a really nice new set. And hang on to the old ones, because it's nice to have spares in case one breaks. The shooter tip's real good for trying to get light bulbs out if it's right over the light bulb. And while you've got it all taken apart, get some nice pinball wax and cleaner. This is one of my favorite, Milwax. There are several popular brands. And treat your play field to a nice waxing. It protects the play field. It makes everything, the ball move a lot smoother. And it's worth doing that about maybe once every 6 months or so to treat it to a new waxing. Another thing, when you got light bulbs go out all the time, and it's nice to have all those lights working. Well, in the older machines, the old bayonet light bulbs, they all came with what they called the number 44 bulb, which was a hot burning bright bulb that could actually eventually peel the paint off the back glass, can actually char the tops of bumper caps and warp plastics on the playfield. They make a bulb called the 47. We switch, every time we get a machine in the shop, we switch out all the 44s for 47s. They're the same size, same shape, fit in the same socket. They aren't quite as bright, but they don't get quite as hot. And so it's a really good idea, if you've got a bunch of 44s, to buy some boxes of bulbs. If you buy a whole box, you can get like 10 bulbs. It's like a buck and a half for a box of them. So buy five or six boxes and switch them out. And and you'll find some of them are very hard to get at because they're in tight little spots. That's why I recommended a shooter tip, but also a little 9/16 inch piece of plastic hose that you can get at a hardware store, fix over the bulb, and you can pull it out real nice. The only thing you got to know is I put a piece of red tape around mine because I lost it so many times in the tool drawer because it vanishes. It's clear. Spent a half hour trying to find it and staring you right in the face. So, but that's really handy. There are a lot of little tools that are really handy for working on your own pinball machine. Of course, you really should have, just for checking, you know, loose connections and all, having a VOM, a meter, a multimeter, either a solid state one that reads digital, or the analog one with the needle going across. They're both neat. If you're doing solid state reading of circuits, the digital one is much more helpful. It reads much more specific, but the analog meter is often easier to figure out what's going on. They're basically the same thing. Also, what's really neat about some of the analog meters, the ones with the needle, is you can get them with a little beeper, a little sound. So when you're testing continuity, whether the wire's complete, whether the bulb is burned, instead of always having to look at the meter, you know, seeing if it's working right, you can listen and the continuity will buzz at you. And so it's really neat to find a meter that will make a sound so you don't have to keep looking over at it. They only cost $30-$35 for a halfway decent meter. It'd be certainly one of the most useful things you can have. There are a lot of little repairs. I got to wrap it up pretty quick here. I could talk all day about minor repairs. But probably the number one that you'd like to know about, the one that most people can do by yourselves very easily, is working on your flippers, because the flippers are the reason we have pinball. And they get a little sluggish, and they get a little weak, and they kind of lose their oomph. And usually it's a very easy repair. And the main reason that flippers get a little weak, this is a little flipper unit. I don't know if you can see it, but most flippers until recently, till the last few years, had what they call an end of stroke switch. And if you open up the play field and you look underneath the flipper, you will see, this is the flipper mag, that there's a little switch next to it, a little leaf switch. And when the flipper is activated, it comes around and there's a little lever on the switch, on the flipper, that opens that switch. And the reason it does that is because people like to hold in those flipper buttons and angle everything. And when they're holding them in, that flipper starts heating up. It can heat up the coil and burn it out. And so they've devised these flippers. All flippers have two sets of wires on them. Flippers have three plugs with two wires. So when you hold the flipper in and the flipper's up there, it comes around, this end of stroke switch opens. And when it opens, it extends the wire. You have twice as much wire in that flipper. It weakens the flipper, and therefore, it doesn't burn it out. But because the flipper is already flipped, it's not weak when it's doing it. It only gets weak at the end. The problem is, and the weakest link, is if that switch is not closed well, if it's not cleaned, there's a little corrosion on it or anything, then all of a sudden the connection there is poor and the flipper is weaker. And all you got to do is take a little file or something for the mechanical ones, or a piece of cardboard like a business card for the electronic ones, and clean those contacts. Clean them till they're shiny. Make sure they're closed real good so they'll make much better contact, and you'll find that the flipper just comes to life again. It's the number one reason flippers get weak. There's about 20 other reasons. I don't have, they're on the book if you'd like to read the book, or I'll be here all day to talk to you about any subject you want. But since I got exactly 5 more minutes, I'd just like to take any questions you might have. Yes, sir.
In terms of lights,
what's your take on LEDs? Well, that's a most interesting question, because that's coming up more and more. The LEDs are extraordinarily bright. They burn extraordinarily cool. You don't have any problem with the heat. They don't draw a lot of current, which makes them really nice for the electronics. But they're very expensive right now, a lot more expensive, but they last about forever. But some people are very irritated because they're too bright. And some pinball suppliers are still not selling LEDs for pinballs. Make sure that they are made for a pinball. And just see, if that's comfortable for you. If you like that bright light, you probably only have to put them in once. I haven't been using LEDs because I find them a little too bright, and nobody can, and when I'm replacing 50 bulbs in a machine, nobody can afford to can afford my bill once I swap them off LEDs. Yes, sir. I use Milwax on all the play fields. I haven't had any problem with it. I did not know it was a petroleum distillate. There are three or four other very popular brands of wax, and you can read through them and see if they'll tell you what's in them. You can also get a good furniture wax, as long as it's not water-based, will work real good on a play field. You don't have to get pinball one. I picked this one because I like the picture on the cover, you know. I mean, why else do you buy stuff? And it's worth studying. I've had better luck with this one than with some of the others. And it's always, but it stinks, you know, and you got to air the place out and get rid of the rags. It's not, but any good cleaner waxer for quality wood will work on a pinball play field. Yes, sir. That's true.
I just wonder if you have any speculation as to when Stern goes and people are wondering they might go out of business, what is going to happen to the value of our machines? Are they going to become really expensive collectibles? Or do you have any speculation?
Well, anytime you got something old that looks good and plays good, it's going to be collectible. The only problem is the generations move on and people don't even know what a pinball machine is. It gets more limited. But I've seen the value of pinball machines since I got involved with it 20 years ago just go up and up and up. But you can still find a pinball machine for $100, and you can find the same pinball machine somewhere else for $800. And Stern, I wish them well, and I hope they stay there. The machines are extraordinarily complex and expensive, but as you can tell from this show here, there's still hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of the old ones, and if you take care of them, they'll last forever. They really will, and they're a whole lot of fun. I really enjoy doing it, and I'm going to say thank you. My time is up, and I wish you have a good time at the expo today.